Hello, and welcome to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show, prescribing hope for healthy families here on American Family Radio. Here's your host, Professor, Pediatric Nurse Practitioner, and Mom of Four, Dr. Jessica Peck.
Well, hey there, friends, and welcome to my favorite time of the day, getting to spend time with you, prescribing hope for healthy families. And it is a great week. I just want to thank you for tuning in, for all of those of you who are listening. I just appreciate you every single day. Wherever you are, we hear from listeners all over who are driving trucks, bringing much needed supplies across the country. We have people who are patrolling the streets, keeping us safe. I have what I call my army of grannies out there who are taking care of kids, and they're listening as they're sitting in the pickup line or folding laundry, or maybe you're at work, or maybe you're on a walk. Wherever you are and whatever you're doing, it's so encouraging to me that you would tune in here to American Family Radio and that you would look for hope for healthy families. It is encouraging to know that we are not alone. And if you've been listening in since January, you know we're on a journey to develop 52 habits for healthy families. On Friday, we'll continue that. You can go back and listen to the Dr. Nurse Mama coaching minutes and catch up, just 1 minute, little coaching minutes to give you healthy habits for your family, starting with spiritual disciplines. And then we talked about some family rhythms. And this last 4 weeks or so, we're spending some time in communication skills. It has been deeply convicting for me, and I hope convicting for you. And I've heard from some of you. And today we are talking to someone who has a lot of excellent communication skills. Some of you, as you hear her start to talk, you're going to wonder, wait, what time is it? Is it 2 o'clock? No, it is. We have Sandy Rios on the show. Sandy Rios, host of Sandy Rios 24/7, right here live with us at 2 o'clock. And Sandy, we're so glad to have you. Thank you so much for taking your time to join us today.
I've been looking forward to this, Jessica. Ever since you asked me, because I think you're kind of new to the air there. And of course, I was on for 10 years on the morning show, but I listened to a couple of your podcasts and or your shows, and I was really impressed with what you're doing. You have a lot of natural gifts. I mean, your voice is great for radio, and the way you love the Lord comes through your voice. And so, and all of your experiences, which I don't know so much about, but I see them on paper. I'm sure all of that will go to make you just a life-giving host for the afternoon. So welcome to AFR Talk.
Well, that is a big compliment coming from you, Sandy. And, you know, I'm a dinosaur in the nursing world, but a baby in the radio world. And American Family Radio has given me such a warm welcome. And I appreciate your compliment about my voice. My kids say POV, your mom's voice is good. ASMR for sleeping is what they will say. But that is okay. And really reading all of your accomplishments and everything that you have done, which I'm just learning about more and more, Sandy, and knowing through reading your book, I am going to estimate that you must be about 128 years old, given all
well,
that you've
I
done
feel
in your life.
Like I'm 128 years old, but I'm not quite there. You know, Wikipedia used to add like 20 years to my age because they hated me.
How rude!
I've been 80 something for 20 years. I think I'm not kidding. It's really funny. It's like, oh my gosh! But
I mean it as a compliment.
I'm not young anymore.
I mean it as a compliment because
oh,
I thought,
thank you.
What do we talk about, Sandy? Do we talk about, you know, we did your radio show in Moscow. Do we talk about your time with Mike Ditka and singing the national anthem for the Chicago Bears and this fabulous fur coat? Do we talk about your former husband winning the Mexico City Olympic Games? Do we talk about you walking through Berlin, East Berlin, and red, white, and blue bell bottoms? Do we talk about you being in North Korea on 9/11? I mean, there are so many things. You see why I say I can't believe you packed so many experiences isn't one lifetime. But I would love for just some of our listeners who may be newer to American Family Radio, for you just to tell a little bit about your growing up and your parents and how God brought you, how you came to know the Lord.
Okay. Well, you know, I was from a very small town and we'll never forget that. I love it. My town has 6,000 people. That's it. My parents, in fact, we came from a little place that was called Concord, and it had a post office, and that was it. That was out in the country. So we moved into town when I was 5, into town, 6,000. My parents came through the Depression. They were from Oklahoma, the Dust Bowl, hard, hard living. Some of those pictures are in my book of the hard times that they had. But they grew up in Christian culture, but not church. And so neither of them really were believers in Christ until I was about 8 years old. And my mother had a we moved to town, the 6,000 people town, and my mother made friends with a woman who was a strong believer. She told my mom. My mom actually would say that her life was so difficult that she was driving into town from the country one day, and she had just gone, she used to make her clothes out of gunny sacks when she was a kid, flour sacks. She had gone to town and had been able to buy patterns and material, which to her was like gold. She was going to be able to make really nice things for her and for her kids. And she said, as she was gripping the steering wheel, the sun came out, and she felt God's presence for the first time in her life. She felt overwhelmed with gratefulness and called out to him in praise, even though she didn't know him. And that's actually the beginning of my mother's journey. There's more, of course, to it. My mother became a Christian, and my dad was kind of a wild man. And for 2 weeks, he couldn't stand that she was in church all the time. It was like he'd lost his wife. And so finally, at the end of 2 weeks, my parents were both on their knees in our little house at the couch, and I'm sitting in a chair not far from them, watching them with the pastor pray to receive Christ, at least my dad did. So that's how it started, Jessica, and my whole life changed. And I later, I wasn't a Christian just because they were. In fact, to make it simple, I just had a powerful encounter with Christ when I was almost 9 years old. And I just felt God calling me, and I fought it for over a year, even as a young girl, with no words to express it. I just, every time we were in church, I was miserable, and I felt God just calling me, and I kept saying, no, whatever that is, no. And so finally, this sounds like a silly story, and I'll end with this. You can ask me something else, but my big sister was 7 years older, and we slept together, and one night, this was unusual, she stayed with a friend. And I was alone in the bed, and I was scared to death. And my dad's snoring was keeping me up, and I was just miserable. And God then honestly came into that bedroom, the Holy Spirit, and just started calling me. And I was just tossing and turning in that bed. No, 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 not even understanding it, Jessica, except this was my prayer. I finally said, well, okay, God, if you'll let me sleep, I'll say yes. And that's actually how my journey started. I fell asleep immediately, woke up the next morning early, and started singing hymns. And that's how it started.
I think that's beautiful. And it reminds me of Paul's conversion and on the road to Damascus, because when people have an encounter with God, Sandy, they can't deny it. I mean, it's hard sometimes to explain to other people, but there's so many testimonies, your mother's, yours, and so many others, where people just encounter God. And, you know, I had a similar experience when I was about your age. I was actually on a field trip, and we had gone crabbing off of at a creek off of this little dock. And I remember just, you know, standing there in the sunshine, and it was a very benign kind of day, but I remember God calling me by name. I remember having an encounter with God and feeling like my life was never the same, that it was just, that was the moment my faith became personal. And again, like you said, when you try to explain it to somebody else, it can sound like, really? But when you've experienced it, you know, and you say, oh yeah, I know that moment. And Sandy, you went on, you know, to do the kinds of things that were really expected at that age. You got married and you had a baby. And I really want to, we're skipping over so much of your story, but if we were going to cover your story, it would have to be about a 5-year mini series, I feel like. So I'm picking the highlights.
Can I choose yeah, who plays me? I think, yes, I'll choose you, Jessica.
Oh my goodness, really? I don't know if I could do that. I will try. I will very try. It would be so fun, let me tell you, because you've had so many adventures. But really, you know, for me, as a mom, as a nurse, I really want to talk about Sasha. Sasha is your daughter, and I want you to talk about the story of when she was born, because I encounter so many parents who have a similar experience that you did, and I just want to take a moment to celebrate her life and talk about that. But talk to us about when Sasha was born.
Let me back up just a little bit, Jessica, okay, before that actual event. When I moved to Berlin, Germany, I was 21 years old, and I was married to my first husband. That was my first husband. And there was everything I said is absolutely true about God's call, and it stayed there. But I had some years of rebellion and could not forgive myself. And I had, just before we went to Berlin, I had had an incredible renewal of my faith. Not new faith. It was like understanding grace for the first time in my life. And God was working mightily. I was just in his word all the time. And I prayed constantly, Lord, whatever you want, I never want to be apart from you again. I will do anything. I will go anywhere. And it wasn't an isolated prayer. It was a frequent prayer. And it was a joyful prayer because of the communion with him. So we moved to Berlin, and it was pretty exciting because that was during the Cold War. And it was one of the, Berlin had more spies per square mile than any city in the world. So that's all I can say about it this time. Checkpoint Charlie was there. Lots of tension between communism and capitalism in the United States. So in the midst of this, I had always wanted a baby. I loved babies. I would babysit with anybody all the time. I just loved babies. I loved dolls, and I longed for a baby. So I got pregnant. And honestly, Jessica, I couldn't even sleep at night for anticipating what it was going to be like to have a baby. And one night I had a dream, a very vivid dream I'll never forget. There was a little girl who came to the side of my bed. She had long, dark hair, and she just stood there in my presence. That's really all that happened, except when I woke up, it just seemed so real to me. So I got pregnant with her in Berlin, came back to the States six or seven months pregnant, and went to the doctor, and I really didn't know anything. I know this sounds so weird to people now, but I honestly didn't know anything about childbirth, except that my mother said to me, Sandra Kay, childbirth is the next thing to death. That was my training. Goodness. Oh, I'm not kidding.
That's terrible.
I'm not kidding. My mother grew up hard, you know, and so that's. No details, though. And so I went to my first doctor's appointment in the States, and they gave me a pamphlet, and I'm sitting in the back seat of my parents' car because my husband was still in Berlin. I started looking at these pictures, Jessica, and I said to myself, what have I gotten myself into? And I just panicked. I was scared to death to go through that process. And in the back seat of that car, I just felt God again speaking to me, saying, well, I just cried out to him, please, Lord, help me not to be afraid. Give me courage. Help me not to be afraid. So fast forward, I was again with my parents. My water broke early in the morning. So we headed in the dark, and there was a brand new sliver of a moon and a brand new morning star. And the song that was, God just filled me with a song. It was, I've seen him in the lightning, heard him in the thunder, and felt him in the rain. My Lord is near me all the time. My Lord is near me all the time. Over and over and over, I kept singing that till I got into the hard labor. The hospital was about an hour away. By noon, I was just in terrible pain, having terrible contractions. And Sasha, my too soon-to-be born daughter, was already crowning. I don't know the name of it then. And yet I couldn't give birth. She just wouldn't come. So they hooked me up to a monitor. This was the early days of monitors, and I could hear her heart beating, and I could hear it just going ta-dum, 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 and then it would stop. And it would start again. I'll tell you the rest in a minute. I know.
Oh, my goodness. What a cliffhanger. That is. Okay, do not go away because you're going to want to hear the rest of this story. I'm telling you, I read it as a mom, as a nurse. I was deeply moved. And Sandy, I believe you that you didn't know anything because what to expect when you're expecting wasn't even published till 1984. And it's hard to explain the world before the internet when we didn't have access to information. But Sandy has a remarkable testimony of faith, determination, courage, resilience in so many ways. But we'll talk more about the life of her daughter, Sasha, when we come back. Don't go away. I'll be right back with Sandy Rios, host of Sandy Rios 24/7. Because of listeners like you, Preborn helped to rescue over 67,000 babies. Your $28 to sponsor one ultrasound doubled a baby's chance at life. Your tax-deductible gift saves lives. Please join us in this life-saving mission. To donate, go to preborn.com/AFR. Will you take a moment and celebrate life with me? Last year, Preborn helped to rescue over 67,000 babies from abortion. Hi, this is Jessica Peck, host of the Dr. Nurse Mama Show, and I want to thank you for your partnership. Think about what you did. 67,000 babies are taking their first breath now because of you. Your $28 sponsored one ultrasound that was given to a woman as she was deciding about the future of her child. Once she saw her precious baby for the first time and heard their sweet heartbeat, her baby's chance at life doubled. But Preborn's mission is not only to rescue babies' lives, but also to lead women to Christ. Last year, Preborn Network Clinic saw 8,900 women receive salvation. Your help is crucial to continue their life-saving work. Your caring, tax-deductible donation saves lives. So please be generous. To donate, go to preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR. Or dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby. Your love can save a life. Preborn's whole mission is to rescue babies from abortion and lead their families to Christ. Last year, Preborn's network of clinics saw 8,900 mothers come to Christ. Please join us in this life-saving mission. To donate, go to preborn.com/AFR. Run to the Father. Welcome back, friends. That is Run to the Father by Cody Carnes, and that is what we're talking about today. We're talking to Sandy Rios, host of Sandy Rios 24/7 right here on American Family Radio. Such an extraordinary life story. She's written about it in her book, God's Velvet Hammer, How an Ordinary Girl Was Called to Do Extraordinary Things. And she's been sharing with us her story of running to the Father over and over again through the mountains and the valleys in her life. And before the break, she was just telling us a story about the birth of her daughter, being in the hospital and listening to her precious heartbeat on the monitor. And Sandy, I'll give it back to you there.
Okay. Well, so this was, again, the early days of heart monitors, but we knew that there was my mother was with me. So the heartbeat would continue to get faster and faster, then stop. But we didn't know anything. And the entire day I didn't see the doctor at all. I went through several shifts of nurses. I was fully dilated probably 8 centimeters by 8 or 9 by noon. But Sasha would not come. They could see her hair. And of course I knew nothing. And my mother really knew nothing except Sandra Kay. Childbirth is the next thing to death. And I thought, well, so it's going as planned, you know? And so I'm gripping the bed rails. It was really frightening. And not to be too graphic, I'm vomiting bile. I was really hurting. And, so my mother's reading scripture and she's, you know, very concerned about me. But you know, Jessica, here's the thing. Remember that prayer, in the backseat of the car when I was so afraid when I looked at that brochure? I was never afraid. During that entire labor, I never lost my courage and determination. And honestly, that is supernatural. Mm-hmm. Sasha didn't actually, an older nurse finally came in 8 or 8:30 at night. And she said, honey, the doctor's going to help you. He's going to give you a saddle block is what they called it then. Yeah. And, I said, is it going to hurt? And she said, honey, it'll be just like heaven. And so they took me into the delivery room, and it was just like heaven when he gave me the saddle block. And Sasha was born, and I jabbered like a magpie, Jessica, because I just jabbered. So I was thrilled. She had a ton of black hair. Her face was all mushed. Her head was all messed up, but I was so grateful. And I could tell the story in a lengthy way, as you know, but I won't. I'll just say that my husband came back from Berlin, and we moved to a university where he was going to graduate school. We were in married student housing. And one day, I was 3 months after we'd gotten there, it was October, I was burping her after nursing her, and her body stiffened, and she began to jerk. Well, I never experienced anything like that. We dropped everything, went to the emergency room. It was a small town, small college town with no physician on duty. So they kept telling us to cut. We went back 3 times that day. She had like 12 grand mal seizures. We finally realized what it was. Went to an emergency room in a town about 10 miles away and found a wonderful pediatrician named Ankar Sharma. I'll never forget him. But Jessica, that was just the beginning. He did every test he knew how to do. He had to shave her head, which just killed me. Mm-hmm. That was the first thing that made me realize that this was serious and maybe permanent. So I would just say that she was a strong... I had a sense that something was wrong almost from the beginning. She had trouble nursing, and I just had a sense. I think mothers have a sense. But it didn't show up until she was 3 months old. And so that was the beginning of hospitalizations. We took her to St. Louis Children's Hospital. We had her at Pittsburgh. I can't even think of the name of the clinic, but it's been so long. Also California, UCLA, we lived out there, and she went to a special program there. We did everything. We went to Mayo Clinic. We went everywhere we could go just trying to find an answer, a cure, a medication, a treatment. But there really wasn't anything. And so when she was on her first birthday, Jessica, she went into a bout of horrible grand mal seizures where she was turning blue and jerking and just over and over. And I was at my parents' house, and they also did not have a hospital. That little town I told you about. So we go. My husband was gone. He was overseas running. And it was my sister, my dad, my mother. And we went to the little tiny emergency room in that little tiny hospital. And they took Sasha, and I went into the room where she was going to be assigned. And honestly, Jessica, I just, I felt nothing. I didn't want to hold her. I didn't have any emotion at all. I suppose I just went into shock after a year of that. And so my parents came into the room, my sister also, where we were waiting for them to bring her in. And they were in no shape to do anything like I'm going to mention. I just said to them, like automatic nerve, like riding a bicycle when you haven't been on in 20 years, I said, we have to pray. With no feeling, no feeling. And but I knew they couldn't pray. So I just bowed my head, and I'm always an honest prayer. I don't believe in flowery words or unnecessary things. I just said, Lord, I don't understand, but I trust you. And honestly, Jessica, that was a turning point in my life. And why is that? Because in that moment, I was learning what real faith is. That it's not if we wish for something, if we cross our fingers hard enough, we ask God enough, he's going to do what we ask, and then that means we have great faith. No, it means that in spite of our circumstances, our hardships, our heartaches, no answers, like in the time frame that we want them, we trust him because of his character and because we know he loves us. So blind trust, faith in a God that for me, I knew who he was. He'd been present in my life. And he had carried me that far, and I chose to just continue to serve him even though I didn't understand. But I don't want to make it sound simple. It wasn't simple. It was 20 years I took care of her in my home. And it was a constant act of faith by my will, not by my feeling. Just, Lord, I don't understand, but I trust you. I trust you, Lord, I trust you. Because she was sick a lot. She had fevers, and it was a hard path. But she was also absolutely delightful, beautiful child, sweet, like a little baby doll when she was little, just a perfectly beautiful little girl. That changed in time. She didn't become beautiful. The seizures ravaged her body. She had to have steroids, you know, so all of that changed. But Honestly, Jessica, the thing that's hardest to explain to people who are around disability or not around it or don't have it in your life is you understand to some degree the difficulty and the sorrow, but you don't understand the joy that they bring. Most people just can't understand that. Unless you've had a child like this in your life or you've worked in we had a facility where I finally placed Sasha when she was 20. And the people there just loved her. When she died, they came in droves to her funeral. It's a thing, again, you know, it's almost like that experience with God and his power that's hard to explain. This is hard to explain, too.
You know, it is hard because when I read about Sasha's story, it seems that what they eventually came to the conclusion, her physicians, her medical team, was that she had experienced a birth injury and developed cerebral palsy. And looking back at that, Sandy, it would be so easy to be bitter, to be angry. And just like you said, I think your transparency in saying, God, I don't understand this, but to still say that God is good, that he is faithful, that he was working through those circumstances, that is very difficult to do when you're facing circumstances like this. And during this time, Sandy, you experienced divorce as well. And you were very transparent about that. And you were singing at the time, having a very successful singing career, but doing that to support yourself. But being a Christian singer who experienced divorce, who also was taking care of a daughter who required so much. By this time, you had a son as well, a younger son. How can you still look and say that God is good? That is the question that people want to answer. How is your faith still so unshakable?
Well, first of all, I think it's important for all of us. Look, it's not an easy lesson to learn, but since I've learned it, I can speak with authority. God is the truth of God. And the reality that he's the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end, that he created all things and he has a plan for this world and an awesome future for all of us that love him, that won't change no matter what my circumstances are. This may sound harsh and maybe hard for people to hear, but this really, truly is not about me. And yet God does care about me. I mean, I came to the point where I was willing, look, I'm slogging along and I'm trusting you, but I can't say, look, I was in a hard place, Jessica, in a very difficult marriage. We were struggling financially and I was struggling with her illness. So I don't know that I had a lot of happy places except in my worship. And I realized truthfully that the only thing I really had, no matter what, was my relationship with him. And I grew so close to him that, no matter what, I didn't want to lose that. And there was joy in his presence that has nothing to do with circumstances. And I know you know that. And so the truth of God doesn't have anything to do with what's the bad things happening in my life. And, you know, the growing in faith makes you understand that. But now here's the rest of the story. I can't tell all the rest of the story, but let me just say, God resolved things in my marriage, I couldn't fix it. I was not capable. And that ended, and that was hard. But also, then Sasha, I had to take, it was necessary for me to place her in a home, which killed me, just killed me. But that was when God began to pour blessings out in my life and bring opportunities that I would never in my small town girl mind have thought to ask. Not a thing. A radio show and the drive time in Chicago, Illinois, third market in the country. A phone call out of the blue. A radio show of my own. I mean, you can't just do that, Jessica. People usually have to, you know, you don't go just deciding you want to do that. It doesn't work that way. Mm-hmm. And so that was a miracle. And then a trip to Russia as a reporter, which I had never done reporting. I had always been singing when I traveled. And so that was, who knew that God was going to take me into serious, I don't know what you call it, punditry, or I already had a very big interest in the world and I had traveled a lot, and I had a lot of opinions and I knew a lot about history, but I never dreamed that God was going to call this girl who sang and played the piano to actually talk, be a Fox News contributor, be the head of Concerned Women for America in Washington, D.C., to lead so many fights there that had nothing to do with music. But all of these adventures were foundationally placed on these early years where I was beaten to a pulp spiritually and other ways, and God was just building me up spiritually. And when things got really bad in D.C., where I was fighting so many of these battles on the front lines, I remember one time I had three full assistants for me, just for me, for my schedule, for radio, for television, for the other stuff. And they were wonderful. And they all came to me like an intervention. They were worried about me because I was under so much pressure. And when they did that, I just burst out laughing. I started laughing. I said, okay, girls, this, you haven't seen anything until you have been sitting in your family room by yourself, nobody mm-hmm. around, and your daughter starts to have a grand mal and throw up on you, and your baby is screaming with colic, and you can't get up. That's pressure. This is mm-hmm. not pressure, you know. So if that's funny, actually, because it's really not like when you, the very core of you is shaken, like it was for me. The stuff that happened in D.C., there was not much fear in me. Because what are they going to do to me? What are they going to do to me? I've already just given all. So here I am. I'm going to fight the fight. And whatever happens to me, happens to me. And I trust you, Lord. I don't understand some of this stuff, but I trust you. And so that's,
I see that, Sandy. I see your character being forged and God preparing you for the pressures that you would have. And you're so right. As a mom, you know, there is nothing scarier than seeing your child literally at the point of death and in a health crisis, and there's nothing that you can do about it. Those kinds of things are absolutely terrifying, and they give you the gumption to, and the grit and the grace that you need to go and to, and the motivation that you need to have those fights for other kids so that you know you can make the world a better place. And we're already up against a break. See, I told you, Sandy, this is like a 5-year mini series. I'm just going to consider this the introductory. But when we come back from break, one of the things that I want to ask you about in talking about your character being forged during that time, there was a passage in your book that really pulled my heart. And you talked about the aftermath of your divorce. And you said this, Sandy, you said, divorced women, it seems to me, often take the course of widely berating their former husbands. Sometimes I think to justify the divorce, or perhaps other times out of their great pain. I was determined not to do that to my children or my former husband. People would have to think what they wanted to think, and God would justify me in his own time and in his own way. And, you know, I want to talk about that a little bit more, Sandy, because I see so many families who struggle with this. We know that about half of families experience divorce or some kind of, marriage separation in their lives. And it is so hard. And I see the children in all of this. And I think of what a great gift you gave your son to do that, and what trust you must have had, because it's so in our human nature to think, oh, let me tell you the story. Once I tell you, you'll understand, and then I'll have understanding and sympathy. And being, how do you let go of what caring about what other people think about you? That's what I want to know when we come back. Again, friends, there's so much to talk about. I do want to know about you being in North Korea on 9/11 too. That was really compelling. We'll see what comes up when we come back. Don't go away. You don't want to miss it. We'll be right back with Sandy Rios, host of Sandy Rios 24/7. See you in just a minute.
And my father, your great-grandfather, fought in World War II.
Really?
He was a gunner on the big ship out in the Pacific Ocean.
Wow.
Your great-grandmother did her part, too.
Was she on a ship?
Oh, no. She stayed back home. She and a lot of her friends worked really hard in a factory because the men had gone off to war.
Ooh.
And they held scrap metal drives to help in the war effort. The folks back home were heroes, too.
Here at the American Family Association, we consider you the heroes back home. As you fulfill your responsibility of caring for your family day to day, your partnership with us is crucial as we fight the enemies of freedom in America. Thank you for your commitment to the American Family Association.
Grandpa, what's a scrap metal drive?
Let's get some cookies, and I'll tell you all about it.
Wonderful and beautiful.
Welcome back, friends. That is That's My King by Cece Winans. And we're talking to a lady today, an extraordinary lady who calls herself God's Velvet Hammer. Her name is Sandy Rios. She has lived a life where she has lived out her convictions with strength and conviction. She has followed her faith, experienced a lot of difficult things, but a lot of extraordinary things that she has done. I shared with you some of those at the beginning, but she has been in China and India. She's been interviewed by any major news pundit you can possibly imagine. She's been in the White House, all of these things. But we are talking today about the time in her life where God really forged her faith. We're talking about her daughter, Sasha, being born with a birth injury resulting in cerebral palsy, about her faith through that. And right before the break, I was asking her about the divorce that she encountered during this time. And as a Christian singer and a public figure, that was really hard. But you said in your book, Sandy, that you were determined to not berate your husband in public and to let God fight that battle for you. Can you just speak to that? Because I think there's so many people who would relate to that and struggle with that. How was that an act of obedience and faith for you?
Well, I think I have seen so many women destroy their husbands, and maybe their husbands are jerks. Maybe they destroy this, deserve this criticism, but I just don't feel that as believe, I've seen it just do such damage, especially to the children. And I just don't think it's right. One of the things that when we separated, one of the things that came to my mind was, I was also, things are always so messy. When something like that happens, it's so messy. You know, life is just not perfect. And you feel out of control. And I remember saying, Lord, just help me to honor you through this. Help me to honor you. Help me to honor you. And I was determined not to say, it was nobody's business. Nobody's business. My parents, my best friends, maybe one or two, but my pastor, but nobody else's. Nobody deserves to know all of the stuff about why you don't have. And I think it's really wrong of Christians and church leaders to expect a full telling or excuse or explanation for divorce in order to have the, you know, some scriptural basis or to be justified. I think someone in the church does need to know. And there needs to be someone vetting reasons and holding people accountable. But not everybody needs to know. And I was a public person. So I remember, I'll just tell you one thing that happened to me. There was a big church in town that I had sung there many times, done concerts. And I went by myself on a Sunday night just because I wanted to worship. And I felt stares. I just felt people staring, not friendly stares. So one time, I'll give you an example. Jessica, I was in a grocery store and I had done an infomercial, and they hired a person to change my look, be in charge of my look. They cut my hair, shaped it, and made me a blonde. This was for an infomercial. So I go to the grocery store, and a person that I knew very, not well, but knew her, but she was in our church. She said to me, I see you're a blonde now.
It's like, scandalous.
Oh, yeah, really. Anyway, so I went to this church and I felt those stares. And this is what God gave me. It's 1 Corinthians 4:3. I care very little if I am judged by you or by any human court. Indeed, I do not even judge myself. I'm sure in my own mind that I have done nothing, or I have not done anything wrong, but that does not make me right. Only the Lord himself can judge me. So you should not decide about things before the time is right. Wait until the Lord comes again. He will show everything clearly. He will show the bad things that people have done secretly. He will show the secret purposes of people's thoughts. And then God will praise each person in a way that's right for them. Now that's not King James, but it really ministered to me. It's like God is going to handle this. I do not have to convince people of anything. And I'm not going to. And, you know, a lot of people that really knew me, trusted me. I remember Moody Broadcasting. They used to play my music a lot on the radio there, because I actually started radio on Moody years ago. Not full-time, but... the head of radio at Moody came to me, Bob Neff, and he said, Sandy, we understand your circumstances, and we are not taking your music off the air here. Because that's what was happening in those days. They would take, and I don't have a problem with that. If there was a bad divorce or bad behavior, they would remove the music. And I didn't have to tell him anything, but he just knew. And so I just would say to anyone going through this, women, please, God has given us the ability to verbalize. And boy, we do verbalize, but don't use your abilities to destroy that man who is your children's father. What is the point? You know, live yourself, clean up your own act, do what's right, concentrate on you, and God will deal with him. Spare your children from the rancor and dividing them and hurting them in that way. That's as much of a sin as he's been unfaithful to you. That's as much, you destroy him, that's just as bad. So that's the end of my lecture on this.
Well, you speak from a place of authority, Sandy. And to finish, you know, I want to read one more quote from your book, because you said, to be clear, I absolutely hold the biblical view that divorce should not be taken without biblical reasons. Marriage remains a sacred vow that should not be broken. But I was not going to share the details of mine in order to save my own reputation. God would take care of that, and he would take care of me and my 10-year-old boy and 16-year-old girl with severe disabilities. I trusted him. My fervent prayer was that I would honor him in the way I conducted myself as a single woman. And if not as a Christian musician, I would serve him in new ways. And that's when the phone rang. And Sandy, that is when your life took a completely different direction. And there's so many different things that we could talk about. But one of the moments that stood out to me in your book is going from that moment thinking, this was even before cancel culture, right? We even called it a thing, but thinking, what am I going to do to provide? And then all of a sudden, you find yourself in North Korea on September 11th, 2001. Can you tell us a little bit about that experience?
Well, of course, that was a culmination of several years of going into public media, doing the Drive Time show in Chicago. That's what came. That's the phone calls I was talking about. Yeah, God just took my life and just said, okay, fasten your seatbelt because here we go. And so North Korea, I worked for Salem Communications, and they used to take about a dozen of us that were from major cities around the country to foreign places. And we would do interviews about persecution. We did interviews in China with the underground church. We were in some very North Vietnam because it was a communist country. I was in, I can't even think, Thailand, lots of places like that. So the last trip I did with them, and it was before I was going to move to Washington, D.C. to become the president of Concerned Women for America, was not North Korea, it was China. And we happened to be in China in northern Manchuria, and it was on the border between of North Korea. And so someone came to us and said, do you want to go into North Korea? There were just six of us that were allowed to do that. It's a long story how that happened, Stephanie, but let me just say, yes, of course we would. But you have to understand that when you do something like this, there's no protections for you. If there's any problems there, any accidents, anything, you're on your own. And so when I lived in Berlin, there was Checkpoint Charlie that divided East and West Berlin. That was one of the passageways. And as you would drive through the tank barriers, the guards would have their guns pointed at you, and you'd go through those tank barriers, and it was very dangerous. And then you came into East Berlin, and it was silent, communistic control, frightening. And so that was my experience the first time with that. But fast forward to this was 2001. The Tumon River was the dividing place between northern Manchuria, which is in China, and North Korea. And there was a bridge, the Tumon Bridge. And so when we crossed that bridge, same thing. Guards, it's outdoors, though. They've got their guns pointed at you, and you're crossing over. We couldn't take anything, car or anything. They had to provide transportation. They provided two people guides, but the reason they had two was because they had to watch each other. They did not trust guides to be by themselves with people like us. And hardly anybody at that time, Jessica, any American was going into North Korea. This was unheard of. And so I'm just trying to figure out how we ended up meeting with people who were hiding in homes in northern Manchuria who would swim across the Tumon River for food because the people were starving to death in North Korea. And when you got into North Korea, it was complete, of course, communist propaganda control. The thing that another thing that struck me is the women dressed like the 50s. Like there was a lot of military. If you've seen any movies of the Korean War or the World War II, there's a certain look that women have with a cap, and that's how the women dressed. It was like they were frozen in time because they couldn't get any outside information. And to underscore that, while we were in North Korea, 9/11 took place back in the in New York City, and we knew nothing about it. Nothing. We came back across the Tumon River after we'd spent a night or two, I can't remember, to be honest with you. And when we got into this restaurant in northern Manchuria, the owner said, through an interpreter, "Do you guys know what happened? Do you know these airlines went into the Twin Towers and this and that?" And honestly, I thought he was crazy. I said to, there were six of us, and one of the guys was from New York City. His name was Andy. I said, "Andy, is he crazy? He's got to be crazy." So Andy had a satellite phone. He called his wife back in New York City, and she confirmed exactly what that man had said and told us that that's the first we'd heard of it. So we went back. We couldn't eat, took our food, and ran behind our hosts, who were actually American Koreans, and went up into, like, in the dark, up to the top floor of this apartment building and got in there, and they turned the television on, and in Korean, we watched all of this happen. There was no editing. We saw all the bodies dropping, everything. And honestly, Jessica, I'm on the floor and I'm just back and forth on my knees, just weeping and weeping. And I thought, my kids are back in the United States. Will I ever see them again? Is this the beginning of World War III? Those were the things that were going through my mind. And so we were stranded in Beijing for about 10 days, and I flew back in through L.A. The L.A. airport was just empty. And there's a lot to say about this, but 2 weeks later, I reported for work in Washington, D.C. at Concerned Women for America, and the whole world had changed. But and I ended up being chosen to be the chairman of the North Korea Freedom Coalition. That's the first time we'd had one in D.C., and I was their chairman. So there's a lot to say about that, the people that we met, the persecuted people in those countries. Of course, all of that impacted my already strong faith. It just confirmed it. And it was a foundation for me to understand the world so that I could lead a national organization with a worldwide view of God's work in the world. So,
you know, it is amazing to see what you've come through. You start your book talking a lot about your experience in East Berlin at the Berlin Wall, and just I could feel the fear coming up off of the pages during that. It just seemed like such a frightening time. And, you know, I remember where I was when the Berlin Wall, I was actually a teenager and I was babysitting. But, you know, we have generation who don't remember how that was. And now we have a generation who didn't live through 9/11. We have children who were born after that. And the world is changing. The world is changing so much. And we see that through some of these, you know, really big things that you've talked about. And just in our last minute together, Sandy, what advice would you give to people in standing firm in your faith and knowing that God is good, even when the world is not?
Well, I think, of course, you have to be in the Word. You have to have knowledge of God's Word. And faith comes by hearing, and hearing by the Word of God. So when you get that in your head and you understand, things kind of fall into place. I was in a refugee camp in Thailand one time, and it was a Buddhist camp where there'd been like a revival, and there were a lot of Christians. And I interviewed one. I was sitting on a bamboo mat on my knees with him about 3 feet away from me. And he was a Buddhist who had just become a Christian. And I asked him through an interpreter, what did Christianity, what difference does it make in your life? How does it change anything? And he said, it has changed the way I think about everything. And I'll never forget that, Jessica. And I would say my husband, who was an FBI agent, said the same thing to me after he became a Christian, after we met. It has changed the way I think about everything. If you know Jesus through his word, it will change the way you think about everything. It will change your optimism for the future, your hope, the way you deal with problems, and give you perspective. And I can't wait, honestly, Jessica, to get to heaven and see my daughter. That's a great perspective right there. So
that is a beautiful perspective, that we serve a God who redeems, who restores, who renews, who will make all things new. And this world is not our home. We have an eternal future to look forward to that is much better than the alternative. Sandy, thank you for sharing your extraordinary story of faith as God's velvet hammer. And to our listeners, wherever you are, I pray the Lord will bless you and keep you and make his face shine upon you and be gracious to you. And I'll see you right back here tomorrow.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.